Good morning. Good morning. It's good to see you guys. Today's message in Genesis 37 is where we will be. We'll probably do a little dab in Genesis 12, 1, just as a kind of a quick recap, and then something along the lines in Peter. But mainly we're going to be in Genesis 37. It's like, why you got to be so mean? Why do you got to be so mean? Now, when I was sitting there reading through this chapter, for some reason, what's the tall, blonde, curly-haired gal that sings that just had the lawsuit for a dollar? Taylor? Huh? Taylor Swift. Yeah, thank you. Taylor Swift. Her song Mean came to mind. I was like, I don't even listen to her. So I went on and listened to it, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's kind of interesting that you have that. But I was going, Lord, why are these guys such this way? What is so hard in the heart? What is so darkened in our heart? So that's kind of the overtone of that. I want to encourage you and remind you that you have your notes to be able to be taken. I don't care if you're a doodler. That doesn't bother me. I don't mind if you're a chickler. Dudes and chick. You know, if you're a doodler and like to doodle, I know that some of you guys, you have to doodle to keep your mind going and whatnot. But make sure to have your cards out. We're going to ask you a few questions after, and that way you'll have some insight. Let's go to Genesis 12:1 for just a minute. We're just going to brush stroke back there. I want to show you and remind you where we've come from. If I can get the map on the board, please, the first one under the images, that would be great. Lord, please, your word, show us what you want to show. What we have here, and I apologize about the hazy look, we have Abram being called out of Ur. Say Ur. Right? He says, get out of your country in 12:1 and change. The Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, get away from your family, these are paraphrases, and from your father's house. Don't worry about your lineage. Don't worry about all the things that you would have as sons' rights. Just bolt, leave the country, leave the family, leave your dad's lineage, leave the family business. Do you know what that's like just to up and go? To up and leave. Leaving everything behind. Yes, there's some winding down that has to happen. You know, our next door neighbor is moving, and we see them getting rid of, you know, having the garage sale, which is something we do in America. We have the garage sale, or we gift it away, or we put a roll off out front, and we're paring down. But I want you to think about something, because Ur is down here, if you can see it, down at the bottom, and they're going to go up to Haran, which is mountain man or mountain country, and you can see the dotted line. What's the dotted line next to? A river? Because that's how they're going to get their water or feed for whatever they're taking with them. And he is heading out, leaving everything behind. Do you have that feeling in your mind? Or that feeling in your heart, that thought in your mind? I guess you could have a feeling in your mind. Emotions can come from the thought. I will make you a great nation. Oh, excuse me. Leave from your father's house to a land that I will show you. Go northeast, and I'll show you where to stop. How's your faith right now? Go southwest until I tell you to stop. Go due north, due south, due east, due west, until I tell you to stop, and I'll show you where to stop. Do you have that feeling in your heart? You got your U-Haul behind your car, or you have nothing, and I'm going to show you where you're going to go. Isn't that crazy? And that's where he's at. If I go back to the map for just a second, thank you. He's going to go from here all the way up to here and back down to Canaan in this area here. You know, of course, we know that's Israel today. And this is a land of promise that he's having for you. That's crazy to me. This is where we're at. He says, I'll make you a great nation and I'll bless you. That's your promise. How comfortable are you with the Lord right now if you're in Abram's hands? How comfortable are you? Not at all. How faithful is Abram? Greatly faithful. I mean, he goes up here. Do we have a next slide? Let me see what that next one is. I think we may have it. Yeah, there we go. See where the dot is? That's an estimate of between Bethel and Ai, or Ayeh. You have Bethel, which is house of God. That's where he first puts an altar when he comes in the mountain country, maybe about 3,000 feet elevation. He builds an altar to the Lord there because he senses this is the land, because the Lord told him, look, news, N-E-W-S, northeast, west, and south. This is the land. As far as you travel in any direction, it'll be yours. This is the nation I was telling you about. Bethel means house of God. It means heap of ruin. You know, when we went through this quite a few weeks ago, we were talking about the differentiation between the two. And you build your camp between house of God and house of ruin, or heap of ruin. You know, we always want to be near the house of God. This is where he's gone. This is what he's done. You know, this is the time when they went on down to Egypt. They went down to Egypt. And he had the whole cross the state line, tell the wife you're going to be the sister. We're going to go to the Pharaoh's house, remember? And the Pharaoh got diseased because the whole house got diseased because Abraham never opened up and told him what was going on. He said, get out of here. And he walked away with all sorts of people and land and agriculture, animals. So we have servants. We got out. He got his wife out okay. Unfortunately, the Pharaoh or whatever, his entire house was diseased by what had happened here. Because a man not standing up in that sense. So that's kind of a little backdrop, you know. Then we have Isaac, who does kind of the same thing. He bolts out and he tells the people around him, Abimelech, I think, was the king. And he told him, it's like, oh no, this is my sister. And Abimelech has challenges, and so they come away the same way. And it brings us up into Jacob and Esau, heel catcher and furry boy, right? We have the orangutan and the heel grabber. So we have Jacob and Esau's in their youth and how they were in competition. You know, we talked a little bit last week or 2 weeks ago about how Esau so easily and willingly gave up his birthright for a bowl of beans, a bowl of peas, and how Jacob stole, in a sense, his blessing, you know, following what his mom said. Yet God still made him a great nation, right? We see them having two different selection points of wives. One goes back to Laban, and the other gets wives from Canaan in the area where he wasn't supposed to, you know, from the Hivites and the Hittites. I don't know if you guys remember, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. And where those guys came from, the Canaanites, is Canaan, grandson of Noah, right? Heth is the son of Canaan, and that's where the Hittites and the Ammonites came from, and the Hivites came from his great-grandson. And they weren't to marry, but Esau wanted it that way, and that's what he got. He got the world, and we had the Edomites that came from it, of which we even built out to the lineage all the way out to Herod the Great, which was an Edomite, and very a cruel ruler. Or you have Jacob going back to Uncle Laban to get one of the daughters. And he comes away with two and two servants, of which we have 12 children that are from that offering. To see these guys grow up, you know, these brothers grow up, you know, and Joseph is our character today. Character study, Joseph. You know, he's a part to this. He's the firstborn of Rebekah. Is that right? I can't remember the wife's name. Sorry, just left me. Anyway, this is his mom. And Jacob loved him because he loved her so. And having that deep love, that deep, Rachel, thank you, that deep love, that son, I don't know, dude. You can love all your kids, but sometimes you may have one that you might love a little bit more or like a little bit more. The love may be consistent. But this guy had a love for his sons. He had a deep love for his sons. And here they are right before him. Joseph raised up under how many different moms were in the tribe? You know, I don't know about you. I had one mom and I had a stepmom. So I had two moms. Some of you may have had four or five moms. Some of you only have one. Some of you have had none for whatever reason. But to have these different moms with these different backgrounds and all of their kids, you know, he's sitting there in the storyline, he's going to be 17, and he's growing up, and we're growing up seeing all this, these characters that are in our lives. And he's got 12 brothers and uncounted sisters, and he's got all these different influences growing up. And we all know in family what the high and low points are of each one of our members, parental or child or sibling, however it may be, niece, nephew, etc. We know what folks are like. You know, he knows their tactics. He knows exactly what his brothers are like. And he snitches them. Let's go take a look here. See what we got in 37. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, the land of Canaan. That's why we kind of developed that map, just to kind of bring a brief little brushstroke of history here. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, and his father's wives. Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. He snitched on his brothers. Does it sound bad to you in 37 of Genesis? Does it sound bad to you to snitch on your family members? Does it? Do you like that? Have you ever been snitched out? If your brothers or sisters ever turned you in, maybe you don't have brothers or sisters. Maybe you got snitched out at work for something that you did. Maybe we ought to look at a different tactic. Why didn't the brothers do a better job? I mean, you're in the family business. You're part of the family. Why didn't you do a better job? Why are you behaving so poorly? Why are you stealing from your father's hand? I mean, really, you're mad at your brother, but you're the one who's cheating. Oh, a little snitch. Here comes the snitch. He's going to tell Dad on what we did. You know what? Flip that. My brother never snitched on. My brother always gave a good report because of the work we did was of good report. You know, are we of good report? Stealing and can't be trusted? That's what's happening here. That's his brothers of all these different moms. Are we tracking a little bit? That's what he's up against. You know, when you're upset because somebody's told on you, it's probably because you've done something wrong and you don't like it. And you think, oh, goody two shoes. Oh, that person is the teacher's pet. You know, bring the apple into the teacher. It could be some of that. Why didn't you bring the apple? Maybe you couldn't afford to. I don't know. But the bottom line is that maybe you're trying to live up to a standard that you shouldn't be. Or maybe you're not doing something well and you're trying to look for a good report. Because, you know, when you're doing something badly, you go ahead and pick on somebody else because it hides your badness. And you want to go ahead and bring them down so you'll feel better about yourself? Really? This is a God character? He doesn't do that with Satan. So why are we listening to Satan? Because when we're not focused on God, our father is Satan. Jesus was clear with that. You know, you deserved it. And you get mad and you get jealous. Or you'll have people around you that get mad and jealous. Remember, we're not just picking on ourselves here. We're looking at the nature of human beings. That's really what the context is. And these guys wanted to do bad. They wanted to do poorly. And quite honestly, there's a love quotient about Dad that's amiss. We'll open that up a bit. So back into 2C, if you will, and a bad report of them to his father was brought. In 3 of 37. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. You know, I had children younger, and I have grandchildren. And our goal with our grandchildren looks a lot different than our goal with our children. Or our youngest child would have a differentiation. For us, you know, we've had a lot of people come through our home, both good and challenged, right? And it is challenging when you have people that you're trying to shape and break of habits, because it was challenging for us. But I'll tell you, coming from my youth, I was a different man than I am today. Are some of you believers from like 5 and have walked the straight and narrow your whole life? Or have some of you had a kind of a crazy life, maybe even a debaucherous life, and came to know the Lord later, maybe in your teen years or in your 20s or older? You know, my father gave his life to Jesus at 67. He had 67 years for God to untangle. Do you understand the concept? We got a lot of things that trap us here. And raising up children in your older age and you know the Lord, you have a different outcome. I'm so thankful when I get to see young couples really working towards bringing their family unto the Lord, bringing their house under His house. Do you understand? Not allowing the wicked stuff to come in, because it comes in. Unfortunately, I've had a couple of discussions this week I didn't want to have, because that there's some youth that are doing some things that I don't want to see or know about, but it's happening. And so I'm going to have to jump in and address it. You know, we're never not being a parent. We're never not being one who shapes another's life. This is constant and consistent. Our lives are this way. At least it is for me. You know, are you going to let one of the little neighbor kids just run all up and down the street and run out in front of a car? No, you're going to pull them back, right? Why wouldn't you talk to them about the Lord? Talk to them about the characteristics of God. So he loved him because he was of his old age. He appreciated him, would probably even be part of that concept. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw their father loved him more than all of the brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. He was a thorn in their sides, plural. But you know what? That coat, you don't think much about it, because we go down and we can go to the store and buy whatever color garment we want. And some of the stuff is pretty crazy, right? You can buy any color, any multitude of colors. To make a coat of many colors would have had to be multiple fabrics, of which those fabrics would have had to be baptized to get the color through and through. Remember, we opened that word up a couple of weeks ago. Baptism is a very pedestrian word, in the sense that you're taking wool or garment material and dipping it into the liquid, and the color goes through and through the entirety of the wool. So, you know, purple was one of the most priciest to get a hold of. To have a coat of many colors came at a bit of expense. And here these guys are sitting here with this jealousy. Jealousy is rooted in self-satisfaction. It's not the only route, it's just one of them. You want it on your own, you know? You want maybe some acknowledgement of your dad or your mom or somebody in authority over you. Because that's these guys, they saw, oh, you love Joseph, great. What about us? What are we, chopped liver? You know? We're lesser? Because we want to have that same acknowledgement. Well, I have to tell you something. Some of my older kids are not the best of kids, and they don't want to hear about the Lord. You know, there can be some of that too. They don't want to hear a loving or a winsome way. Or they do, and I just don't know about it. And of some of those, they have made that change. They've come to know the Lord, and their life looks different, and their family looks different because their mind had changed, thus changing the rest of themselves. You want self-satisfaction. I'll tell you what, studying Ruth, we don't need to take a page out of her book or a chapter out of the book of Ruth. We need to take the whole book of Ruth out and develop that in our lives. Pull that out of her playbook, because you talk about a humble person. Remember, famine, husbands died, father-in-law died, sister, brother-in-law died. There's nothing but the women. One woman went back to the Moabites, and Ruth, a Moabite, went on with Naomi and held her up in the entirety. Wasn't a jealous bone in her body in that regard. She was there to serve and to serve greatly. Jealousy happens in family circles. It just does. Doesn't matter whether you're poor or rich, if it's going to be in your family or your business or your social group, there's always a pecking order. And you know, with guys, you'll see that when guys get together, there'll always be one bird that flaps his wings more than the other. You know, they'll all flap their wings, but one has to flap more than the other. And when you see that, you're just kind of, you could be a part of it. But when you see that, you just kind of just watch it. Know that that's part of it. And hopefully everybody will settle down and play nice with one another. Hard lessons to learn. To release the desire for somebody's attention or approval. It's a hard thing to release, because you yearn so much that somebody would just consider you more than they have. They would just consider your actions or your deeds or your version of love. And it's hard to break that. Well, why would we want to break that? Because it's inappropriate to desire so much on a horizontal plane that we don't desire enough after the Lord. Do you understand? All you really need to do is please the Lord, and to hell with other thinking. Because when you please the Lord, everything else gets settled. It'll either get settled in a winsome and loving relationship, or it'll get settled and severed. When we have our eyes on the Lord, you're seeking out the absolute center of the one who can give you the greatest level of goodness and acknowledgement, the Father of all times. He's the greatest rewarder of attention. Do you know that? Do you understand that in your life, that he is the greatest awarder of attention? Not that you need it, not that he has to give it, but he knows it because he's a good father. He knows when you're doing well, and he knows when you're not doing so well, and he wants to bring you back when you're not doing so well. And if correction comes in the midst of that, then so be it. Because that's part of the game. That's part of the thing. He's a good father. He chastens those he loves. He corrects those that he's loved, that he loves. You see, the other thing is, when we're loved, we can't settle for less. We cannot settle for just being lazy with the sheep. You know, maybe you decided, enough of this grain, enough of this lentil. I want one of the kids, the baby goats. I want a kid as a shepherd out in the field. I'm going to kill it for my lunch and blame it on a ravenous wolf or a lion. Because that's what happens here. You do understand, right? Love doesn't do that. Love, you know, that whole love is not jealous. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not self-promoting. But this is what happens in the absence of proper love seen and shown by the Father in a proper format and a proper setting. When you love someone, you don't cheat on them. You don't cheat on that love. And make sure, if you're the one that's putting the line or the measure for love up, that it's biblically based and not what's your personal expectation of love to be. You know what? You can love a ton of people. You can love a ton of people. They didn't respect their dad. If they respected their dad, they would love their brother. If they would have respected their dad, they would have taken care of the sheep. Why did he send a guy out? Because he knew he was of good rapport. Why did he send him out to get a report back? Because he knew he could trust him, Joseph, at 17. It shows about the kind of guy that he is. He saw how they grew up, like we spoke about a minute ago. He saw their slackered example. Well, why didn't you show a better example to the rest of them that were there? You have to show this one example like this? So many sons, so many daughters. You can love people. You know, you had the ability to love an amazing amount of people. Did you know that? It's accurate. The level of love can't be measured. Let me tell you something. When you can't love on a physical scale, you can't see love measured out in that way. You can see the actions of love, but you can't see love. I love you. That's a word. It connotates an emotion. It has a backdrop to it. And people receive love in a varied way. Let me tell you something about the heart, because your heart is where we consider love, right? Your heart beats around 2,000 to 2,500 gallons of blood a day. That's a lot of blood. That's how much it's moving. It holds about 5 quarts, or 1 gallon and a quart. That's the entire circulatory system. Your blood weighs about the same as water, about 8.33 pounds per gallon. And your body holds between 10 to 10 and a half pounds of blood. It has a measure to it. Hold your fist together like this. Like this. Hold your fist together. That's about the size of your heart. Look down at it. That's your heart size. You know, we always put our hand over our heart and we do it on the left side. The reason is the heart is shaped in such a kind of a position here that one part of it lumps out where you can feel it more, but the heart is really right here and centered. You know, when you, your blood will travel about 20,000 miles a day. That's about the distance of 4 times back and forth across the United States. I just think that is fascinating to me. You know, that No wonder I'm so tired all the time. My blood's gone from New York to LA 4 times, right? You know, the women's heart is about 8 ounces. A man's heart is about 10 ounces. And have you guys ever squeezed a brand new tennis ball? That's about the pressure that the heart will pump when it's pumping blood. You have your aorta that's about the size of a garden hose, and your capillaries are about the size of a human hair. Isn't that crazy? Altogether, you have about 60,000 miles worth of stuff in your body, in veins and capillaries and aorta, which would circumference the earth about twice. Your body is limited. It holds just about that much. It can't take any more blood. It can't send out any more fluid than what we just talked about. Love, on the other hand, has no limits. It has zero limits. You can literally love hundreds upon hundreds of people, and you can love them quite deeply. Did you know that? You have that capacity to do so because the Lord gives you the capacity. He wants you to practice it. Ask God for opportunities to love people. Well, they're going to fail me. Yeah, they are. People are going to fail you. But you want to hear what 1 Peter 4 and 8 says? In 1 Peter 4.8, it says, above all things, what is all? Above all things, have a fervent love. That's a desire. That is an action, a fervent love for one another. For love will cover a multitude of sins. You mean I have to keep on loving people? Mm-hmm. But you have to love them with the way God would love them. Sometimes loving is a release thing as well. You know, sometimes you may have to love folks at a distance, but that's not everybody. Did you know you're going to be able to love about 80 to 90% of the people you engage? That's a fair number. All things. He says it. Above all things, have a fervent love. That's above all things means number one thing, have a fervent love for one another. For love will cover a multitude of sins. When people failed you, you know how to handle that. You've got scripture. You love through it. You know, folks fail, but they also succeed. And they may be failing in an area, and 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 finally they get it. Finally the Lord, they may fail in an area their entire life. Well, then love them in the areas that aren't hurtful for you until you can love them when they're hurt. When you love somebody, you don't want to engage in activities or that would bring a disgrace to that name. Those boys should have loved their father and not brought disgrace to his name. They should have loved their father and not done the things that they did. These men, they trusted their impulses. They were off-putting. They were way out of line. They were way out of line. It's centered in respect. It's centered in appreciation, love is. And it's clear that Jacob loved his sons, and it's an unfortunate thing that he would have to send his youngest son out to watch. How sad you couldn't take the oldest or any one of the others and be the one that would have been the cover. When his brothers saw in 4 of 37 and 4, their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him. They couldn't even mention his name in sense. Just the thought of him. And then you've got just that person. Sometimes you have a person you may just totally dislike or have historically. You don't dislike them anymore. And they walk in the room, and just their presence in the room is some kind of something you don't want to be any a part of. Right? Okay, well, let's add this to it in 5. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, please hear this dream which I've dreamed in 7. There were, and you can show the slide, there we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, a sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves around all around and bowed down to my sheaves. How you liking him now? You don't like him anyway. Daddy's pet. And now you're hearing this dream. Dude. Siblings are so close sometimes they can't even step back and see what the Lord's doing with an individual. Do you know when you step back from something, do you know you get the bigger picture? You know, the closer you are to something, the less you see. All I see is what looks like fly's eyes. But when I come back, I see the whole microphone and cord and stand and then the whole setting. When you're so close to a situation, all you see is short-sightedness. And then these guys, oh, it's like, oh, great. Now you're going to be the king over us too? So he goes on in that next slide. He goes on and said, his brother said to him, shall we indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Can't stand it, guy. Can't even stand the sound of his voice. You smell bad. I don't even want to look at you. Your breath, that voice is an irritant to me. It's because you've let it become that. You know, being on a worship team, you know, worship leading doesn't always mean that you're in front of the microphone. You do know that, right? Many leaders lead from behind. And most every worship leader that I have had, I've never sat over or sat in on a worship team that somebody was older than me. And I know now why, because I'm shaping people that God would have do. And when we see that they have that they are following after the Lord, then it's kind of a time to back off and let these things happen. Come back in and back off, right? You got to see what's going on around you. How come my brother gets all the good stuff and I get the excess? You know, he got the beans, all I got was the liquid. It's God's call to choose. Then in 9, he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I've dreamed another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me. So he told his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said, and that's a strong correction, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him. Oh, I wish I had what he had. Don't envy a spiritual gift, please. Operate in the one that God's given you, because it's well needed. If you're going after a gift that's not yours and somebody else is maybe a little more expressive and you're not, maybe they have more money to be able to be used and you don't, it's okay. Don't envy their gifts. Applaud God for what he's doing in that person, right? Allow him to have that way. You don't need to have that gift. You're gifted in a multitude of ways. I personally kind of see a spiritual blendedness. There's times that I don't have wisdom. I'm not known to have wisdom. But there's times and situations in praying for the wisdom of Solomon, wisdom comes. They're after this. They envied him. But the little piece here that we don't want to go unnoticed is exactly this. Dad is seeing something here. And he says, but his father kept the matter in mind. You know, when you're older in the faith or you're older in life, you can see different things with kids and folks around. And there's times that you can literally see when God has their hand on somebody, maybe in a situation or for an eternity. And it's like, there's something special about that person. Maybe you can attribute it to a song singer. You'll hear somebody that has a voice that you just brings you to tears. And I mean just brings you to tears, right? And you're going, oh, how gifted they are. And then maybe you see them after and they're really a wretch. You know, on stage they're one way, but over here they're really not a deep and well-rounded person. Or maybe they're the whole package. And when they're the whole package, they're the whole package. Dad sees something here. Attribute that. Be mindful. When I can sit there and look at the kids, you'll sit there and go, you know, with the proper training, the proper counsel, and even going through tough and hard times, that person, there's something special about that person. Now, we don't bring them up and say, you're going to be a pastor one day, you're going to be a worship leader one day. We wouldn't do that. We just keep bringing them the word and letting them make mistakes, and keep bringing them the word and letting them make mistakes, and watch what God does with them. Then Joseph, here we go. Then Joseph, his brothers, went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, and that's Jacob is Israel, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. And he goes, here I am, willing to be there, willing to be there. Then he said, please go to see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me. So he sent to him out to the valley of Hebron and went to Shechem. I mean, he jetted on out there. And if we have a slide for that, that would be great. He jetted on out there, right? That would be our modern day view. Go out there, take a lay of the land, and come back. Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, will go out when he hears of a challenging time. He won't listen to what's going on. He goes out firsthand and sees. And that's what he's doing here, kind of similarly. Go out there, check this out. I want to know what's going on. His dad trusts him. So we have Shechem, which is right here, and Dothan, which is right up there. That's about somewhere in that 15-mile range, 15 to 20-mile range is where they're going, because they've moved. They're supposed to be in Shechem, and they moved the flock to Dothan. In 13, now a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field, and asked him, "What are you seeking?" Why is he wandering in the field? He's looking all over Shechem for his brothers. Why aren't you where you said you were to be, or I told you to go? Maybe dad knows the field structure better, or he knows that there's a war up north. "I'm seeking my brothers," he says in 16. "Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks." And the man said, "They have departed from here, and I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" And then Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And when he was afar off, even before he came near, they conspired to kill him. "I'm going to kill that guy. I hate that guy." That's their brother. That's their blood. They're half brothers. They have one father. Do you understand that seething anger? This isn't, "I'm going to murder you." This is, "I'm going to murder you." Plot to kill. Because they found him in Dothan. They were trying to get away with something. You understand? They went from Shechem to Dothan. They're trying to get away with something. They're trying to get away from father's influence. Isn't that like us sometimes? We want to get away from dad's influence. Gonna kill him. In 19, then they said, said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come, therefore, let us kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will come of his dreams. Dreamer, we'll put an end to you." This is where they are wanting to go. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said, "Shed no blood, but cast him into a pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand to him, that he might deliver him out of the hands and bring him to his father." So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers and they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. That's the representation of his father's love for him. In 24, then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. It was an old cistern. And they sat down and ate a meal, and they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites. We all know who the Ishmaelites are, right? Abraham and Sarah's mistake. Ishmael, coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. The Midianite trader passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, and sold him as an Ishmaelite for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. Now, dude, this sounds so cakewalk when you read it, but do you hear the boy screaming? And no, don't take me. No, no. For $250-$300 in today money? Do you understand that? Dude, we've got a sex industry that's ripping off 13 million of our kids regularly. Taking them, snatching them right out of their family, snatching right out of Walmart, snatching them right out of that church courtyard. It's not happening here, but it could and it can, and it happens that quick. It takes this long. Watch. Grab a kid. Put your mouth, hand over their mouth, and they're out the door in a car, drive off. Why do you think I am anal about never let a kid be out there unwatched? Ever. At the store, ever. This is not 1950 or 1960 or 1970. This is 2017, and there is money to be made on kids. And the tune's going to be around $10,000 to $15,000 or the next hit of crack. Do you understand? I freak out if I don't know where my kids are. Bathroom checks. Men, you guys that have children, you better go into that bathroom. If it's a woman's bathroom, women, you better go into that bathroom and check the lay of the land. And men, you sit with your eyes on that bathroom. And when a woman goes in and a girl is in there, or a man goes in there in this day and age, then by God, somebody better be in that bathroom so no wrong is done to them, pictures or whatever. They sold him. Then Reuben returned to the pit. Indeed, Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. Ah! Where's my brother? He probably had another idea for him. And he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and where shall I go? So they took the tunic, killed a kid of the goats, that's a baby goat, and dipped the tunic in the blood. And they sent the tunic of many colors, and they had brought it to their father. And we have found this. Do you know whether it's your son's tunic or not? Lie upon lie upon lie. You didn't even care about your dad's feelings. You know he loved that boy. And now you're going to take this thing that he loved and dip it in blood. And blood is literally on your hands and on that tunic. And that's all you care about. And you're going to preach love and family and all the above? Really? You didn't even care about your dad, or you would have been in Shechem and they wouldn't even need to have to send out Joseph to you. You care more about your self-interest and the fat of your gut and the fat of your heart and the fat of your mind than the caring about your father's interests. And to a man, they were guilty. They ripped their father's heart out as soon as they came in. You know why? Because it says right here, they tried to console him, and he didn't even want to be consoled. He was so hurt. What hatred must go? Why you got to be so mean? And that's just such an understatement. Why do you have to have such hatred for another? He recognized it in 33. It's my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces, and then he tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. What kind of son would do this? This is a son. Let alone somebody we don't even know. That doesn't give somebody permission to be a hatred or anything like that. Right? Where does this hatred come from? Well, I want to tell you something. I saw a video that John MacArthur had made, and it was in regards to Charlottesville. And it was it was about a 6-minute video. And it was very telling, and it was something that we already know. What goes on in a man, woman, or child. And I don't care your perspective. Hate is hate.
Hi, Pastor John. My name is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
I was back and forth with this question, but I received some slight peer pressure through text message, so...
So you succumbed to the pressure.
Yes, I did. Okay. So with that being said, what is a biblical and Christ-proclaiming view of Charlottesville, Virginia, and all that's happened recently?
Sure. I'll give you a biblical view of it. The human heart is desperately wicked. And the human heart is hostile toward God and self-centered and proud and selfish and angry. What Charlottesville simply demonstrates is that fallen humanity is corrupt. All I see in that is the justification of anger. Look, that's not about slavery. That's not about something that happened 200 years ago. That's an opportunity for angry, hostile, self-willed, selfish people to explode and feel good about it. because they can get away with it when there's enough of them, too many of them to stop. No one tolerates white supremacists. When I was down in Mississippi years ago, I was arrested by those kinds of people for preaching the gospel in black high schools, and I was put in jail, and they took all my money away. I know that. I was with the black leaders in Jackson, Mississippi, and Charles Evers, Medgar Evers' brother. Charles was the first black mayor in the South. Charles, his brother Medgar, was the first martyr of the civil rights movement. He was killed. I was in the room when Martin Luther King was assassinated with those black leaders. We went to Memphis, and I stood on the blood spots on that motel with those men. And I stood in the little bathroom on top of the toilet where James Earl Ray shot him out the window. Those men were my friends. That was my community. I couldn't buy groceries in that town when I got back. In Mendenhall, Mississippi, I couldn't eat in a restaurant. I've seen all that. That's not what's going on there in Charlottesville or any of these other demonstrations. This is the wretched, fallen human heart feeling like it can rise to any level that is not completely controlled. And let me tell you what gets you there. Number one, the human heart is evil. War is in the heart. Men will kill. That's how they function. But God has built three restraints into society. Restraint number one is in the individual, and it's the conscience. But the conscience reacts to a moral law. So if you have a whole generation of young people that have been taught a twisted, perverted, inverted, upside down, and backwards moral law, then their conscience can't function. The conscience is simply a recognition mechanism that says that's wrong, that's right, that excuses and accuses. But it only can function where there's a sound moral law written in the heart. So you have a whole generation of these people, this generation, who have had a totally perverted sense of what morality is. And the dominant part of this new morality is, I'm the most important person in the world. It's all about me. It's the selfie culture. So conscience is now crippled. Secondly, God put fathers and mothers in a family to bring a rod to discipline people in order to subdue their evil. If the family is destroyed and the family breaks down, then you have no control over those people. So conscience can't function because the moral law has been literally destroyed. Families don't function, so there's no discipline learned. There's no sense of what is right, what is acceptable behavior. And the only institution left that God ordained was the police. And the police were given a sword to subdue those who do evil. When you assault the police long enough that you diminish their authority and the sense of fear and the sense of reverence that a society has to have for those who police them, then all hell will break loose. Conscience isn't functioning, family's not functioning, and the police have been stripped of their powers in the social consciousness. You literally have unleashed the human heart at its worst level. This is not about race, and this is not about what happened in America in the past. No one can tolerate white supremacists. No one can tolerate the Ku Klux Klan. One of my dear friends, John Perkins, his brother was killed in front of him by the Ku Klux Klan in the street. No one can tolerate that. That is just one manifestation of the evil of the human heart. And we have only begun to see it once it's unleashed, and it's going to start coming in all kinds of forms because of the breakdown of moral law, the breakdown of the conscience, the breakdown of the family, and because of the incessant assaults on governing authorities. So get ready. I don't think it's going to go away. Okay?
Thank you, Pastor.
You're welcome. Thank you, Paul.
That's how a brother can kill another brother. If it can happen on the street, it can happen in the family, it can happen in our hearts. And you know, Jesus even spoke about he used it in the perspective of adultery. If you even desire after another woman, you have created that sin in your own heart. Hatred. When's the first time we saw hatred act? In the garden. He took a bite of the apple. It was a simple thing. Apple. You can pick the fruit, what you would want to call it. You can pick that. But let me tell you something. That's when hatred started. Because just like these guys in the field, disobedience was abounding there. What was the first physical act against another human being? Was the sons of Adam and Eve. An old brother killed his brother because he was jealous. You don't think hatred looms unchecked? So when we talk about these opportunities for you to stretch out and teach those around you to put that moral compass back in their hearts, or to be a vehicle for that, or a conduit of the Holy Spirit to work through you in that sense, to go out and be that willful person that will go out and unshackle people that are bound to hate. Because I watched a movie that Andy Garcia was in about what happened in Mexico, how the government killed out all the priests. And it was horrible what they had done. And we can look through this word and we can look through history and see the atrocities in the name of self-prevailing righteousness. Tribe on tribe, nation on nation, man on man. And it's horrible. And unchecked, it will continue to happen. You do realize in the last days, you'll be stripped from your homes. You understand that, Christian. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. We, from day one, as we close up here, from day one, we have talked about preparing for you to be stripped out of your home and be beaten for your faith. It is upon us and in many cases around the corner. And I don't mean far around the corner in a time scale. I mean literally around the corner. Is that a doom and gloom thing? No. It is prepare, because the Lord, as dark as it gets, the light gets brighter. And he's going to need to have us available and ready and at the ready. And we have to raise another generation for that. I don't like any of this stuff. I don't like the idea that the human heart will be unleashed on the earth. Rome, 1/3 to 50% were bound, were overcome and taken into slavery. And we study most of that in the New Testament. 66% of it's written by Paul, 65, whatever. You need to be setting a good example for folks. And I don't mean posting something really cool on Facebook or a great meme. I mean being engaged in people's eye, in their lives with love is the forefront. We have to stand for righteousness in one person's life. Go. Really, really loudly, please. What's the verse? And I'll repeat it for the recording. 1 Corinthians 13:13, New Living Translation. Three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. That is our calling card. When you hand over your business card, you're handing over the quotient of love. End of story. Love is a verb. Requires action. It's not on your terms. It's on his terms. Because he died for you and me, and we were so not lovable nor worthy from a standard that man could keep. But God seen us as worthy, and he settled the matters and affairs through his death on the cross, his life living here and his life living eternally, as we saw it physically embodied in the resurrection, eternity's reference. Your heart has no measure for love. like the physical liquid. You can love a boatload of people. You have to ask God to show you the person that you don't want to love, how he loves them. You have to ask him to show us his love through his eyes so that you can see them with his eyes. And once you see that person with his eyes, then you can love them. Every person that perpetrates hate, all these brothers, Cain and Abel situation, the stuff that we hear now, if they knew Jesus Christ and genuinely loved the Father, they wouldn't do this, because this guy had 11 brothers or 10 brothers that did not love like God loves and did not love like the Father loved. And they rubbed the blood in his face in a metaphorical sense. Why you gotta be so mean? Love. With fervent love. Fervent love. Father, please. Loving on our terms is solid ground and shoreside. Loving on your terms, that's an area unknown to many, and many of us. As we do communion, Father, and there are people that we needed to engage with. Father, would you please reveal those people, and then purge the desire to not love or care about them any longer. Would you purge that from us? Father, we do not want to be holding the multicolored garment stained in blood that we killed a sacrifice by our hands to sacrifice for a lie. We don't want to be holding the hammer and nail that crucified you. Fist in your face, beard pulled, slug. Would you just surface that, Father? And if it's not happening to anybody here, then praise you for that, Lord. Praise you for that. Show us, Father, how we can love even more and not conditionalize love. You only gave us one condition, and that was accepting Jesus Christ. Get us out of our comfort zone, please, Lord, please, 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 please.